It was an incoming transport. Abruptly, they recalled transport plane engines leaving after the incoming firing. This thing had been slow-poking its way home, and they had passed it. Good. Dunnell Dean, much to Dwight's dismay, landed beside the bus bar and turned it on. They just sat there. The landing lights were now on. Any Cyclo employee left alive was not concentrating on coming out. The transport plane landed. The Cyclos got out, fooled around with baggage. Then the pilot got out. The Cyclos walked in a mob toward the compound. Then they began to feel something was wrong and stopped. The Cyclo pilot reached for his belt gun. Dunnell Dean and Dwight cut them down with assault rifles. Dunnell Dean flew Dwight over to the fuel dump. They knew what fuel cartridge the transport took, for it was a duplicate of the plane that had brought Johnny to Scotland. Dwight got the fuel cartridges. Dunnell Dean brought him back to the transport plane. Dwight took the old cartridges out and put new ones in. Dunnell Dean shot a guard car that had survived and came racing toward them. It blew up. Dunnell Dean got into the air. Dwight flew the transport up. Dunnell Dean shot the master power pole to bits in a fanfare of sparks and flashes. Seeing that Dwight was well clear, Dunnell Dean flew to a point about 10 feet above the breathe gas dump. He dropped a low-yield, lead-shielded, time-fused radioactive mine on it. He soared up and the dump roared in a lovely green-blue flash. He again checked to see where Dwight had gotten to, saw he was safe. Dunnell Dean soared to 10,000 feet, nosed the plane over, sighted, and fired at the explosives dump. It went up like a miniature volcano, absolutely beautiful. He dropped back and verified that the compound had not exploded. This was part of their orders. The machinery and stored planes were apparently intact. With no atmosphere to breathe and no fuel to fly, with 90% of its personnel probably dead, the mine site in Cornwall was a write-off. That paid for a lot of crimes. Dunnell Dean fell in beside the transport. "What's a tulnip?" asked Dunnell Dean. Dwight didn't know either, but Dunnell Dean supposed he did look strange in a Chinko air mask and U.S. Air Force stratosphere flying gear. They had already agreed on a new and wonderful plan Dunnell Dean had thought up. They had almost 6 hours of radio silence left. Orders complete and time on their hands. Dunnell Dean was related to the chief of Clan Fergus, and besides, there was a lass he had not seen for nearly a year. They hoped the other 14 mineside attack planes had done as well. Of course, perhaps not with the same style. They headed for Scotland. 4. Zoot had sunk into deep apathy. The gas drone roared on, deafening, cold and dark. That silly dimwit Nup. Zoot had thought at first that the engine sounds he heard were just some rattles in this old relic, but after a while his trained ear could pick the sound out separately from the din in here. He listened in different parts of the cheerless drone, and then at the flapping door. It was the Mark 32. The Mark 32 hit 'em low, kill 'em, heavy armored ground strafer. Nup was flying escort to the drone? Zoot had puzzled and puzzled on it, and in fact had done little else. At first, Zoot was all hope. He thought Nup had followed him out of the hangar intending to lower a ladder to the open door and snatch him out of here. But Nup seemed to be utterly unaware of the fact that there was an open door, and was flying on the opposite side of the drone from it. True, Zoot had not briefed him at all. The busted lamp bulb had mostly been talking about ball bods and rumors in Cyclo that they were the next target. What nonsense. Zoot went over it carefully. No, in the rush of trying to get out, and at those attacking Tulnips with a ground strafer, he had simply raced around asking whether anyone had been checked out on a Mark 32, and had slammed Nup into the co-pilot seat, and then had had to go attend to that drone. He dimly remembered his last words to Nup. They were, "Come on." And he had been surprised when Nup hadn't run after him to the drone. instead of mopping up the tallnips, Nup was out there flying escort in a ground strafer. He might have been checked out, but he certainly didn't know what it was for. Why, with that Mark 32, he could batter down a whole city, and nothing could penetrate its hide. It was a support plane for ground troops. No ground fire could touch it. No interceptor ships could even scratch its hide. And what was Nup doing with it? Riding escort to a drone that needed none. Zut got bitter. Damn Turl and damn Nup. Then, as the huge drone with its deafening engines rolled along to the devil's knew what destination, Zut began to realize that Nup didn't know he was aboard. A bit later, when he looked at his watch, Zut realized that that Mark 32 was going to run out of fuel. Wherever they were in this dark night, that Mark 32 was a write-off. He hadn't put fuel in it for such a trip because he didn't have cartridges, and a Mark 32 had no great range anyway, being intended for local use. Well, Zut had plenty of breathe gas. He had a gun. He had a wrench. For a while, he monkeyed around with the preset box armor, thinking he might be able to open it and change it. But without keys or the means to make them, not even a piece of blast artillery could open it. When they said armored, they sure meant these damned old gas drones. So he finally slumped down on the cold plates in the forward end of the ship, and in apathy decided to last it out. In a day or two or three, this thing would land. There was nothing in it to cushion anyone from the rough landings these made, but Zut imagined he would survive it. Just sit and wait. That was all he could do. Damn Turl, damn Nup, damn the company. And all on half pay and no bonuses. 5. Johnny was searching for the drone. Every view screen was flashing. Down below, the cold Arctic spread out, visible in the screens, invisible to direct sight. He remembered it from his last trip across it. A forbidding array. Once down in it, you were dead, if not from direct cold on an ice floe, then from immersion in those waters. As nearly as he could judge, the gas drone was somewhere ahead, only a few minutes now. Shortly, he should have it on his screen. He was a little bit disturbed about the girls and Thor. He had not seen them on his screens as he went by. Of course, he was by then very high. The spot of light he saw might be their fire, but it also might be the planes, still burning. He had wasted too much time already, and help was on the way to them. He remembered their numb faces when they realized he was leaving them there. But they must be all right. Probably they were at the academy or the compound by now. Maybe the parson had been driving very fast. A mine ground car could do over 60 on rough terrain. He hoped the other planes had reached the mine sites and done their jobs. There was still 5 hours of radio silence yet to go. He wished he could open up on this radio and yell to them, "Hey, anybody that's done in his mine site, get up here to such and such coordinates and help blast this confounded drone." But he didn't dare. It might cost some of them their lives by alerting their targets. They all had extra fuel and then some. They all had spare ammunition. But if any had had to delay, or were waiting for an optimal moment to pounce on a mine site, and he opened up, it could throw their lives away. He wasn't about to kill any Scots to save his own hide. When radio silence opened and Robert didn't hear from him, Robert would converge them to handle the drone. Late, maybe, but a second chance. He hoped it wouldn't come to that, for their friends in Scotland would be endangered. Maybe he was searching for something that was wave-canceled. That escort ship was his hope. Maybe it had peeled off or gone somewhere else. Its blip should be visible. Ah, now, what was that tiny spark of green on the view screen? Another iceberg? No, the height telltale read 4,223 feet. Speed? Speed? 302 miles per hour. He had the escort on the screen. His gloved hands danced on the console. He braked down from hypersonic, dropping abruptly to 5,000 feet in a descent as fast as a firing rocket. He cushioned at the bottom, feeling a trifle squashed for a moment. Easy. Take it easy. Size up this escort. He got it bright and clear in infrared. There was the drone beside it. One thing at a time. This escort was first target. What was that plane? He had never seen anything like it before. Low slung, flat, minimum skids. It looked like it was mainly armor. Suddenly he realized that his guns might not even dent it. He had seen a tank bazooka flash against its side without affecting it in the least. He had a sinking feeling. Not only was the drone renowned as impregnable, but here was an escort ship that... His mind raced with possibilities. Robert the Fox sometimes said, "When you only have 2 inches of claymore, use 10 feet of guile." What did that escort know about him? He reached for the local command radio switch. The range was only about 20 miles. A torrent of angry cyclo words hit him.
"It's about time somebody showed up. I should have been relieved of this job hours ago. What kept you?"
Angry. Very angry. Johnny opened his transmit switch. He lowered the pitch of his voice as much as possible.
"How are things?"
"The drone's all right, and why shouldn't it be? I've been escorting it, haven't I? You certainly run a messed up planet here. It's not like this on Cyclo. I should hope not. You're late. What's your name?"
Johnny hastily dredged up a name that was common to 20% of the Cyclos. "Snit. Could I ask who I'm talking to?"
"Nup. Executive Administrator Nup. Use your executive ship when you address me. Crap planet."
"Did you arrive recently, your executive ship?" asked Johnny.
"Just today, Snit. And how am I greeted? With a crummy ball bot attack anyone could handle."
"Wait." Suspiciously.
"You have a very strange accent. Like a Chinko instruction disc." "That's what it is. You're not a ball bot, are you?"
The click of firing buttons pulled off safety to standby. "I was born here," said Johnny truthfully. A sharp, nasty laugh.
"Oh, a colonial."
Silence for a moment.
"Were you briefed on this mission?"
"A little bit, your executive ship, but orders have been changed. That's what I was sent to tell you."
"You're not relieving me?"
Very hostile. "The destination has been changed," said Johnny. "There's radio silence. They had to send me with the word."
"Radio silence?"
"Planetary-wide, your executive ship."
"Ah, then it is a ball-bot attack. They operate everything on radio. I knew it."
"I'm afraid so, your executive ship."
"Well, if you're not going to relieve me, what am I expected to do? I am almost out of fuel. Where's the nearest mine site?"
Johnny thought very fast. "Your executive ship, the orders were that if you were almost out of fuel..." Good Lord, where could he send him? That Mark 32 was the only thing that one could home in on a search. "I was to tell you to land with magnetic grapnels on top of the drone, right at the front end."
"What?"
Incredulous. "Then drop off when we come close to the next mine site. You've got a map there?"
"No, I haven't got a map. You run things very badly on this planet. Not like Cyclo. It should be reported."
"There's an attack on."
"Nothing can dent this plane. It's a ground strafer. I don't know why it's being sent on escort."
"How much fuel do you have, your executive ship?" A pause. Then,
"Crap! It's only 10 minutes worth. You almost killed me with your lateness."
"Well, just land on the extreme front end of the drone."
"Why the front end? I should land in the middle. If I land on the front end, it will unbalance the weight distribution of the drone."
"It's the way it's loaded this trip. They omitted part of the load in the front. They said specifically the front end."
"This is a pretty heavy plane."
"Not for the drone. You better get moving, your executive ship. That water is cold down there. Ice, too. And you'll need fuel to offload. It's only a few hours to the next mine site." Johnny watched his screens. He couldn't see the plane in direct sight. With a bit of anxiety, he opened up the view to include the monstrous drone. He felt faint with relief when the Mark 32 dove ahead, sat down on the top front section of the drone, and put on its magnetic grips. They held. The heat indicator of the view screen showed the Mark 32 had shut off its motors. Johnny watched. He expected the drone to nose down, possibly to crash. It did sag. Then its engines started to compensate and it rolled, gently, thundering along, still going on its lethal way. Nup had landed off-center, inducing a continuous roll right to left, left to right. It would roll to the right, and the balance motors would compensate and bring it back too far to the left, and then overcompensate in the other direction. Only about 10 degrees each way. But this did not at all change the steadfast course the drone was following. A very slow roll. Was it also crabbing slightly?